Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Two Indigenous actors visited the Terrace Camote Centre to speak to youth about finding their voice through acting. CFNR's Sabrina Spencer is on The Scoop. And human-bear conflicts and encounters are on the rise in the north. Jimmy Morgan is speaking to CICK News about the Gitignau Guardian program to manage those interactions on their territory. The West Kootenay Cycling Co-op is working on an active connecting trail after receiving a $50,000 grant and looking for feedback. Scott at CJLY is on the scoop with that story this week. But first, Lonnie Taylor at CKTZ is speaking to a career counselor who is hosting solopreneur workshops for Cortez's burgeoning small business owners. That's today on The Scoop.
This is a CKTZ news update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. The Cortez Community Economic Development Association is now offering entrepreneurs and business owners support. Tammy Collingwood is a business mentor for CETA, and since she has begun this role in January, she's been working with individuals to help them with their small businesses, especially people that Tammy refers to as solopreneurs. Opportunity.
So CETA, the Cortez Community Economic Development Association, it has hired you to be a business mentor. Is that right?
So I've been contracted by CETA to provide a business mentorship coordinator services to the Cortez people.
So where is the need? What are you discovering in terms of who is reaching out for your help?
Where CETA is coming from is through the lens of a community economic development. It's not just about helping businesses, it's looking at the sustainability of our economy and what is going to help create a thriving local economy. So there's so much that can be done in that realm. And what I've chosen to focus on is where the most need is, where folks need the most help. And businesses are anyone self-employed is a business. So there's such a wide range, right? We have stores that are businesses. We have the Island Farms. We have Hollyhock. We have a few larger small businesses on Cortez. But we also have what I like to refer to as a solopreneur. So many folks who are basically trying to make a business through self-employment, because that's what you got to do here, really, that if you're not working at one of these already established businesses, you're creating your own job. And so those are businesses as well. Often people think of businesses as a big something with lots of infrastructure and whatnot, but it can be just a person, like a gardener who has a business, or a crafter at the market, or a cleaner. Or so many folks here do have businesses, whether they consider themselves a business or not, it's like a little business. And as we know, there's so many aspects to business, right? There's sales, there's marketing, there's doing the work, there's the bookkeeping, there's administrative, public relations. So most of the time, one person isn't going to be really skilled at all of those different things. There's going to be places or gaps in their skills where they just need support, make the business grow or make it sustainable. My first approach in working one-on-one with businesses was to put out a poster, and people responded, and I just send out a little bit of an intake to find out what the needs, where do they need support. And so then we meet and talk, and a lot of times it's really just about strategy, where should I go with this? How can I organize my thoughts around this? Where do I need support? And then either providing that one-on-one support myself, if it's within the scope of my skill, and if not, then hooking them up with someone who can help them or finding the resources for them to be able to get some support with that.
So you're saying that most of the need is coming from solopreneurs, as you refer to them.
That's where I'm tending to focus, maybe because I do have a background in career development. Like before I came to Cortez, I had a job as a career development counselor. And so I worked with a lot of individuals one-on-one, often during like times of transitioning from one type of work to another, or looking at retraining or self-employment. So that's like my natural go-to of working one-on-one with folks. And also just the having started a product-based business on Cortez from scratch, I learned a lot about what are all the obstacles that we face as people starting businesses on Cortez. Like we do have quite a bit of challenges that we face, like being in a remote area for several reasons. Accessing support and the help that we need or resources is often challenging. And then even just little things like shipping, or you ran out of ink for your printer and you can't just go to the store and get it. So there's just quite a few challenges. That's where I decided to focus my energy at the beginning of my contract. And that's worked out really well. I've been working with about 6 or 7 different solopreneurs or aspiring businesses. And sometimes it's just about having someone to bounce ideas with, or to like talk to someone about something or talk through something, or to have an outside perspective.
Are you finding any solutions that are collaborative or that might be able to help more than one person on the island?
Yeah. So the other part of my job is creating opportunities, more opportunities for businesses to thrive, and building connections and collaborating with existing organizations. One of the things I'm working on right now is I'm working with Hollyhock on a few projects. So the idea is to hopefully have a Hollyhock guest participate a little bit more in our local culture and economy, and then at the same time helping to support local business. So a few of the projects that I have planned that I'm working on right now is one is to run a pop-up makers market on the Hollyhock campus this summer. Not sure exactly how often, but at least once or twice a month. So that gives more exposure to our local makers and artists and product-based businesses to access a whole new fresh array of folks that are coming to Cortez that are normally not really tapped.
One of the things that always comes up with that is the seasonal nature of especially businesses like Hollyhock. And I'm curious if you've come up with any ideas, or if that's something that you're helping Hollyhock or any other seasonal businesses work to become more year-round?
Yeah, this is definitely something that we've been talking about and also discussing at the tourism cafes. Yeah, and so the report has been complete now. There was some folks at the tourism folks in the province were helping us with a plan. And Kate had mentioned that the report is complete. So now it's about taking that report forward. But it's definitely something that we want to think about, and especially for smaller businesses or solopreneurs, like how to extend their season so that there's more business spread out throughout the year. So that's a multi-pronged approach. I think starting with expanding the season a little bit, like looking into the shoulder seasons, like with these artist studio tours, those could happen any time of year. So if we can get a good flow going, and if artists are enjoying it and it's working out, then maybe that can be something that can be offered as a guided tour, an experience when folks come, like a reason for folks to come to Cortez, something to do basically when they come to Cortez in the off season that is both interesting for them and also creates more opportunities for local businesses and artists and whatnot. So we do have quite a few artists and creative people on Cortez. And I think that's a part of our economy that is not really tapped that much. And I feel like, why not work with what we have? Who do we have here on Cortez? Let's look at who we have, what they're doing, and how can we help them continue to do what they love doing and create a more sustainable income for themselves?
Sita, cceda.ca.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island.
Last week, the West Kootenay Cycling Coalition held a series of open houses to get feedback from the public on their proposed active transportation trail from Castlegar to Nelson. The West Kootenay Cycling Coalition, in partnership with Watt Consulting and the Regional District of Central Kootenay, have been working on a feasibility study for the project since the summer of 2023 when they received a $50,000 grant through the province's Active Transportation Fund. Salita Work from the West Kootenay Cycling Coalition says the study is almost finished.
We're almost complete. We've looked at a couple of different route options and where they would connect to different neighborhoods. We've looked at traffic volumes. We've consulted with stakeholders. And now we're just in the final phase of this part of the project where we're getting public input. So it's really important that people fill out the survey. We need to show public interest if we're going to move to phase two and apply for funding to actually design and build it.
To learn more or to fill out the survey, visit westkootenaycycling.ca/projects. As for feedback from the open houses, Work says it was positive, especially when discussing proposed pedestrian bridges.
Feedback was overwhelmingly positive. Interestingly enough, in our proposal, we have several pedestrian bridges. It was interesting. People were really supportive of the bridges. They loved the idea of having these dedicated bridges for pedestrians and cyclists.
Work also mentioned that the main purpose of the trail isn't for people to consistently travel the entire 40-kilometer length by bike or foot, but to connect the communities between Castlegar and Nelson.
We didn't expect that people would ride on a regular basis and in large volumes the entire 45-kilometer route.
Right.
It's really to connect all the communities in between, and also to connect the communities in between to Castlegar or Nelson.
The next steps for the project involve taking all the community feedback data and building it into a final proposal to the RDCK, and if it is adopted by the RDCK, they can then begin to plan which sections of the trail will be built first and apply for federal and provincial grants to fund the project. There's currently no timeline for when and if the trail will be built, but Work says a target completion date of 2030 is possible. Reporting in Nelson, Scott Onishchuk, KCR News.
My name's Jimmy Morgan. I'm a Lahiap Guardian for the Gitanyahu Hereditary Chiefs and the Gitanyahu Lahiap Guardians program. I've been in fisheries and wildlife for about 16 years, and I'm also a facilitator for Nature United's technical support team for guardians.
We're sitting here at the Prestige. Can you tell me what the conference has been about and what's been going on these past 2 days?
We have gathered here in the Prestige to discuss bear human conflicts within the SAF region, which is Environmental Stewardship Initiatives technical. So we've realized there's bear-human conflicts every single year. There's always huge issues and they vary in different communities. But we have an opportunity to work together as a SAF group. We're trying to develop bear coordinators for communities within the SAF region. And the idea of that is to have a bear coordinator that would be the middleman or middle woman between community and the COs, so that if there's some bear issues, there's a one person that contacts the COs. It doesn't matter if somebody else calls, but it's better than 20 calls for the same bear. If you have, the idea was to have a community member that's really keen and knowledgeable about which bears are around, and they'll know that, oh, that bear is not really a problem bear. He always walks by here every day. So we don't really have to call that one in. That's the whole idea of that, is just to fill some gaps, meaning where COs need support to handle some certain situations, where there's a Northern Lights animal shelter here that does so much work, and it's not just bears. They have so much work on their hands. And we see that as a gap that guardians can start filling, which is to become professional enough to handle situations such as getting rid of maybe some, trapping out some problem bears in the future. Like right now, we're not there yet, but we're just sitting down and discussing what would be some best managed practices that we can follow moving forward and start supporting each other. So the main idea was to get the right people in the right room and start coming up with a plan on how do we actually mitigate this problem. A little bit more than bear awareness workshops, which is super important and it's very needed. But we needed to have all the right people in the right room to start saying, this is where we're at, and this is how we're going to move forward to get rid of this or start mitigating this problem. And it's not the same issue in every community. We're aware of that too. Right now, we're just going to agree on best managed practices moving forward. Like we, for example, composting, definitely we all agree that it's probably a good best managed practice. But individually in each community, it might look different.
Is there currently an informal guardianship program where people who do have a lot of bear knowledge are acting as that go-between or helping currently in communities? Or is this something completely new that the Gitignau saw somewhere else?
I'm glad you asked that question because we invited Kitisu Heihe in from down south. They have a guardian program that has taken it upon themselves to develop a wildlife coexistence plan and strategy. We're using that kind of as a model, and we're going to develop something that says, this is our plan moving forward. We'd love to work together with communities to get this and this done. Also, here's an example of how it's worked somewhere else. So it is doable. There's so much to be done, and it feels daunting all the time, but there is a group that has done a lot, and their plan was to even trap out some problem bears too, but along the way, they realized they haven't had to use their bear trap since they started doing this because of all the best managed practices, the stinky stuff going in the right places, attractants managing them and mitigating. And the bigger the community, seems like it's harder to do that.
Like you need to have more buy-in from the people?
Yeah. Kitisu Heihe has about 300-400 people, maybe 5 at the most, but they still had to get the buy-in from them. And it's really amazing that they can do so much out there because they rely on their bears too for tourism. Okay. So they have a lot of respect for their bears and they know that it's their territory too. So one thing that they've done was pretty neat is develop signage that shows that this is a shared area between humans and bears. You don't always have to call in these bears unless they're an issue in that spot. Yeah. So in the map, that spot's like green. And then a red spot would be like, we don't really want bears here. So if you see a bear here, you can call it in. And little things like that we can agree on. And then individually, communities can adjust their programs accordingly to their communities. But right now, as a starting point, we're just really happy to have the right people in the right room and start agreeing on what are these best managed practices that we can feasibly follow and stay safe and professional.
Yeah. And Devilawan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. On April 23rd, the Komodi Friendship Society in Terrace hosted two Indigenous Canadian actors. Alyssa Wapentuck and Curtis Pavilion Vinish had Indigenous storytelling, acting, and filmmaking session. CFNR was on location and later spoke with the actors regarding the event, upcoming workshops, and upcoming projects.
Hello, Tanse. My name is Alyssa Wapentuck. I am a filmmaker, actress, and mama from Big Stone Cree First Nation in Treaty 8 Territory and Conklin, Alberta.
Awesome. Tanse. Curtis Pilon at Siagasun. My name is Curtis Pilon Vinish, and I am the CEO and founder of the Indigenous Futures Film Academy.
What brings you to Terrace?
Yeah, so this summer I had the opportunity to meet Lillian and the team here in Ministiquin Cree Nation when they brought their youth to Northern Saskatchewan. I was working at the culture camp they went to, and made a relationship with them, and we just continued in conversation about the possibility of coming to the community and sharing my story as well as workshops around acting and writing. And when they presented me with the idea, I wanted to, you know, bring other people along, and so I connected with Alyssa and was able to, well, we're all able to make it work to be here.
Yeah, it was really kind of by chance that Curtis and I just ran into each other again. When was that, in February? In February. We're doing culture learning back home in Alberta, and then I had just finished launching Story Medicine, so we just decided to come in and come out to this community and share. And my hope is to inspire especially the Indigenous youth and to just make them feel like, no, they're not alone, and share my story with them.
So for some of our listeners, let them know what types of movies and stuff have you been on that some people may have seen.
I've been on Disney's Peter Pan and Wendy, Bones of Crows, and Riverdale, where I played Lizzo.
And I had the pleasure of being in Disney's Prey, Predator 5. And then my next project is, the title is Inspire, and it looks an animated film. It launched June 31st on CBC and APTN.
What inspires you to come and do events and stuff like this?
Personally, it's sharing my journey and experiences with young people, and being that a role model, a part of that is sharing the story and the stories and experiences. I think trying to let young people know that no matter where you come from, you know, it's not predetermined where you're going to end up, and that, you know, anything's possible, you know, so we can belong in these spaces within film and TV. Also showing the realness of this, there's still struggles and the importance of seeking that support either via spirituality and ceremony or else within therapy. And I think having role models that are talking about those things are really important for our young people to hear as they navigate, you know, this time in their life.
Yeah, for me personally, I've known that my story is very intense. Growing up, it was very hard, and I knew that it was time for me to share some of that. And because of my healing journey, and because of the work that I've done and everything's coming together, I felt like it was just time now to turn to community.
And yeah. Do you feel that your background, not necessarily just in the entertainment business, but I know you were a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So does that kind of help you to try and lead the Indigenous youth especially?
Yeah, I think it gives me a unique perspective of having classroom experience and leading a classroom. It really taught me and reminded me of the day-to-day challenges that our young people are facing within society. And other challenges from identity to belonging. And so with my story and workshops, I really try to amplify, you know, how that's helped me in my journey, and, you know, trying to guide them and inspire them to, you know, look more into that journey, or, you know, seek those sort of things out.
So I think you guys are here a couple of more days, or are you done here now?
Tomorrow, I think we have one more event at one of the local schools.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then what's the plans from here? What's next? Like, are you guys continuing traveling to different communities, or you have other projects and stuff that you're working on personally?
Yeah, so I know that personally, once I get back, I'm having a week off just because I've been, in the last 3 weeks, I've been to Fredericton, New Brunswick, to Ottawa, to now here. So I'll want a week off to kind of recuperate. And then I know in the first week of May, I'm in Kaktuishtahaw working with young people there. And then I believe Alyssa and I have another workshop at the end of May that we're doing together. That's in Yellow Quill First Nation that will be going out there. And in the meantime, like I mentioned at the beginning, I run a non-for-profit called the Indigenous Futures Film Academy. So my time goes to that, and essentially just, it's an organization that aims to provide training within the film industry to Indigenous people and trying to limit barriers from funding to then accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm continuing the tour. This is a part of my story medicine tour right now, and I'll be continuing that throughout the year until November, when I have my baby. Then I'll probably be taking a really good deserved break. But this is my main focus right now, other than filmmaking and acting. Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else that either of you would like to share or add at all?
It's been really great being here. It's a beautiful place to be. Would not mind coming back at all, especially with the
gorgeous
wonderful,
place.
Beautiful, clean air we can breathe in versus.
It smells so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the mountains.
Yes.
Oh, God, it's
mountains.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing us here and.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking with us today.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.